Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Caster, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Brian McGraw. Hello, Brian.
Hi, Gary. Good to be here.
Well, it's good to have you here. So Brian is the superintendent of Jefferson City Schools, and we brought him in today because we'd love to chat with him about a bond issue that will be on the April 4th ballot. So, Brian, let's dive into why the district says that it needs the funds, how those funds would be spent if the bond issue passes, and then maybe a timeline of how that money would be spent. So, first of all, let's just get an idea of what the needs are.
We have some large-scale needs throughout the project, and when you have large projects of this nature, you just can't do that in your normal budget. So mm-hmm. We have an opportunity to go after $85 million and have that ability to do some of these large scale projects within our means. With that, you know, we would look to attack on a variety of levels where the most kids can be impacted and, mm-hmm. and have access to great facilities. So we looked at the opportunity with building a new pre-K center for our kids. Right now, we have 150 students that we serve, students of poverty and special needs, and that's at Southwest Early Childhood Center. And we want to more than double that with a new pre-K center. So we would open it up to all the community and have our community have the opportunity for their kids to go to pre-K and get them in the system earlier. So that's one thing with the pre-K center. The second one is renovating our two middle schools. Mm-hmm. Both Thomas Jefferson and Lewis and Clark are 30 years old this year, and wear and tear over a 30-year process from anything from floors to paint to windows to making the campus more secure and expanding a little bit with four classrooms in both spots are things we would like to do for both TJ and LC. And then we talk about Nichols Career Center. We're always looking to expand Nichols and the opportunities we provide kids. 13 surrounding high schools go into Nichols. Just in our community, we have CC and JC and Helias kids attend Nichols every day. So mm-hmm. we would expand on our space there. We would build a building across the street from Thorpe, but it's adjacent to Nichols there, and what would be the left center field of the new baseball field. And we would have a building trades building for our kids and also a cosmetology program that would be added to the Nichols offerings. And then last thing would be upgrading our pre-K to 8 technology with interactive boards for our students and staff. Our whiteboards are aging. The boards of the past are aging out. It's hard to get parts. Mm-hmm. This would be technology that we presently have in our high schools that are touchscreen interactive that kids can use at their Chromebooks and could see their work on the screen, and teachers can go back and forth with them. So those are four of our main projects, along with Miller Performing Arts Center, which our whole community uses. Private groups, public groups, schools, clubs, Rotary, different associations use it for meetings or performances or fundraisers. And that lighting and sound equipment there is aging. And those are some big numbers that you just couldn't do in a normal budget. So we have an opportunity to do that. And, you know, we're hoping that we're able to do that moving forward for the whole community.
Sure. So let's get into a couple of them. So let's talk about the pre-K aspect of it. Certainly the governor's been talking about, especially this year, about the importance of investing in pre-K education. So from your perspective as superintendent, what do you see the value of this doubling of space for pre-K? What will that really allow? How will the district reap the benefits of that?
The earlier you get kids in to learning opportunities, the stronger they become. You know, and data shows that as kids who have been in pre-K systems or pre-K environments are less likely to drop out, less likely to be in special education, more successful in their lives. So we look at it twofold. We'll get kids in our system earlier with more opportunities for success in the future. And then on the other hand, the community aspect of kids who are 4 and 5 years old, not being at home, but their parents able to get into the workforce. And, you know, we see so many places out there that are in need of workers. You know, they would be able to have their kids in a learning environment, a consistent learning environment, and then they would be able to help anybody in the community and going back to work. You know, we started a pre-K. We got a grant this year in January, pre-K grant for just our staff from DESE, and we had 29 kids in that program on January 2nd. Mm. And one thing one of the parents had said to me is, they had 2 children in there, and just in the January to May timeframe, they were able to save $7,000 in fees that they would have had to pay for their kids. So they're in pre-K now. And just imagine if every family had that opportunity, what we could be providing for our community.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the middle school, because that's been a hot button issue for a few years now as well. So would these funds help address any issues as far as space? So let's talk about that a little bit, as well as I'm also curious about your comment about improving safety. What would that look like?
So the space wise, last year we had around 1,000 students at TJ and in the 800s at LC. When we did some movement within the district, that seemed to balance out. It was 990 and 950 this year at different points in the year. So we've seen that stabilization between both schools, and we see that consistently when we project out, it will keep even instead of one pulling away from the other. Mm-hmm. So that will address our, in the past they looked at having some 5-6 buildings,
right,
and then 7-8 buildings. Well, if you built new 5-6 buildings, then you still didn't address the need at the 7-8 buildings to update them. Plus you're creating more transitions for kids, which kids struggle with. By doing this, we're able to, we have the populations are consistent. We're able to have the kids in renovated facilities and in safer facilities. We look to upgrade our security systems there. And also right now, kids have to go out to the trailers throughout the day. And there's two at both schools that kids go back and forth to. And we would like to add 4 classrooms onto both schools and not have those there. So that way it's a complete campus.
All right. So obviously it's a pretty extensive little list there.
Sure.
$85 million can be eaten up pretty quickly.
Sure.
So how flexible is the list of funding sources that would receive the funding of this? I mean, is there a priority list as to which ones would, you're definitely going to do this and the others, it's going to depend how much money is left over?
Well, hopefully prices will come down, and if we use the, expensive prices in projecting out what everything would cost, just learning from what we're seeing out there in construction and what other school districts are getting back in bids. So we would do it over a 5-year period in phases, because we know there's only so many companies that can complete that type of work.
Right.
For example, the middle schools will be done over 2 summers in phases, just because they're large spaces. So we would be able to do phase 1 in one summer, phase 2 in the other. The technology could be completed immediately, mm-hmm. the pre-K to 8 technology. The pre-K center would take a year to plan and then a year to build. So we would be looking, 3 years out to get that completed. So everything, those projects, pre-K center be done, lighting and sound at Miller Center would be done immediately, Nichols, which would be done within the year, and then the middle schools would be done over those phases. Those are some of the time frames. So we look to try to get everything done in that 5-year window.
Yeah. And presumably the school board would be the one that would determine what the priorities were should prices not go down, and all of a sudden it became a funding issue.
Correct.
So, okay, well, let's get into the weeds then about the bond issue. All right. How does it work? So it's not a new bond issue. To me, it almost seems like it's an extension of an existing bond issue. The rate stays the same, and you just basically are just adding years onto the end of the bond issue. Is that a fair statement?
Yes. So J plus C passed in 2017, set our rate at $4.79, which, compared to districts our size, when we looked at some of the averages that are out there, most of them are in the mid-5s.
Mm-hmm.
So we're under that, which is a great thing. But our community came out and supported that and allowed us to set that at $4.79. So essentially, it expires at 2038. This will push it to 2045, but still allow us to maintain that rate and have that equity to do the projects that we need to do. We look at some of the things Columbia School District does. It's a similar model where they're, they do every 5-6 years that zero tax rate increase proposal and are allowed to build or renovate what they need to renovate. So staying within that model and not allowing our taxpayers to have the fluctuation of some great increase, this will allow us to, their support back in 2017 allowed us an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and honestly, the promoters of J plus C had made that a point of the ballot issue at that time, that they signaled they would be coming back, or the district might be coming back every 5 to 10 years for something such as this. So to me, one of the advantages of this as an approach is that certainly the district's needs, any organization's needs, will change, and there will be longer term projects that need to be undertaken, as you mentioned. But this gives voters an opportunity to say, no, at this point, we need to stop. So have you heard much reaction from the public about this idea of their support for this bond issue?
We've been out talking to a lot of groups, you know, Rotary and Lions Club and parent groups and Eastside Business Association. And I think, you know, one consistent thing we've heard is the pre-K element and you know, that we need to get kids in school earlier, and the opportunities and things that we read in the paper from, you know, Lieutenant Governor Keough and Governor Parson constantly, you know, saying the need for communities to have that. And we went up and visited North Kansas City's Early Childhood Center and really looked at that building as a model and trying to replicate it down here in Jeff City. So we've heard a lot of positives about the pre-K. One thing, you know, not being here when the middle schools were built, mm-hmm. you know, I sat with Dr. Straub and went over the projects, and he just started laughing because he's like, 30 years ago, geez, this seems like yesterday, we were planning on building those buildings. Mm-hmm. And now, wow, that is 30 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you hear that a lot when you present to groups like, oh my God, you're right. Like, it's just a shock to people. So
sure.
Those are some of the things that we've heard, but really not a lot of negativity. People really happy with the focus on that early childhood and giving people the opportunity to have kids in school at an earlier age.
Yeah. So for this bond issue to pass, it's not a simple majority. It's a little bit of a hill for it to pass. So kind of walk through what that's going to take.
It's a 4/7 majority. So 57% of voters would have to support it for us to have the opportunity to do these projects. So it's not just 50% plus one. It's a little bit different.
Yeah. So what would be the district's approach should it not hit that mark?
I think we're going to have to reconvene with stakeholders and, you know, the board and our administrators and faculty, everybody out there, to decide, you know, what our next steps are, you know, as a district. You know, we looked at the projects that where we could get the most kids involved and where the money would be used wisely. And this was what we felt, you know, listening to people. But it doesn't mean, and we want to think positive. But if that happens, we just reconvene and talk to people and engage where we need to go.
All right. So with that pre-K center, the use of the Southwest Center would no longer be needed as a building. So what's the plans for it?
What we were looking to do, so currently JCAC is on the other side of Miller Performing Arts Center, mm-hmm. and we're kind of space restricted there. Mm-hmm. And we have a waiting list of almost 100 students to get into JCAC, kids who need that out-of-the-box opportunity for schooling and the ability to have success in their high school career. And our plans would be to, once Southwest, the kids would leave Southwest, to renovate Southwest and give JCAC their own building where we could get more kids involved and opportunities to get their diploma.
Yeah. So for those who may not be familiar with why JCAC exists and how they approach education, give us a brief synopsis of that.
So that draws from both high schools, students mm-hmm. from both high schools, and kids who may need extra assistance as far as a different schedule. Maybe they work a shift for their family and have to come to school at from 11 to 6, or, you know, alternative opportunities for kids mm-hmm. that aren't locked into that normal school routine. They do have kids in a normal school routine there, but there's others where they have to create a schedule that works for them and their family.
Right.
So it's an out-of-the-box opportunity for kids that has proven successful over a long period of time now. More and more kids are graduating as they need, you know, that type of education.
Right.
Still getting the education they need to be successful and, you know, wherever they may want to go.
Which goes to trying to reduce that dropout rate. You know, the other option is they don't fit into the high school, so at that point they just drop out. So what would the district do with the old JCAC building?
That is pretty much our oldest facility. The HVAC there is original to the building.
Yeah.
And when you walk in, you kind of know that. So we would look to renovate that and create some professional development space. There's really not a lot of opportunity around for that. So, mm-hmm. you know, we would allow the community, you know, if there was some community group that wanted to book that and have breakout rooms, mm-hmm. they'd have those opportunities and that space available in that building. So we really want to make it a true community use building.
Yeah.
Where people can feel free to take advantage of the space.
Yeah, which kind of fits that whole approach with the Miller Performing Arts Center as well, as you've mentioned. So, okay. Well, Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me over on this beautiful day.
Absolutely. So again, on this beautiful day, we'll remind you, get to the polls on April 4th. A lot of interesting issues and candidates on the ballot. Get out there and exercise your right to vote. Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.